Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Welcome to the Olive Podcast. I'm Janine, Olive's deputy editor and podcast host, and each week I'll be catching up with fascinating characters from the food world as they share stories, advice, and expertise. I'm delighted to welcome Max Halley back to the podcast. Max is the owner of the now iconic Max's Sandwich Shop in North London, which celebrates its 10th anniversary this year. He's also the co-owner of three pubs and a regular on TV, including being the resident sandwich and condiment expert on Channel 4 Sunday Brunch. His new book, Max's World of Sandwiches, is a celebration of deliciousness between two bits of bread, taking quirky fillings like goat tikka masala, lasagna and pickled prawns and turning them into something magical. Welcome, Max.
Thank you.
And congratulations on your new book.
Thank you very much.
And congratulations on your new baby as well.
Thank you.
I know you've just become a dad.
Congratulations on still being alive 18 weeks later.
Yeah. Are you happy with the book? I mean, I think it's incredible.
I am genuinely excited about it. Yeah, I feel this one, because obviously I wrote a book about sandwiches before, which has now been proven to be the second best book about sandwiches ever written, falling just behind this one. I feel that the bit of me that is Max's Sandwich Shop wrote the first book. Yep. It was almost like Max's, that was almost like the manual to Max's Sandwich Shop.
Yeah.
To my sandwich shop. I'm talking about myself further. To my sandwich shop. And that this one, I feel like I wrote this one for me, yeah, and obviously for everybody else, but yeah, that this was more like places I went and things I ate,
yeah,
and stuff I saw and how that affected the things that I could think about putting between two bits.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of you in this book in terms of if you are making a recipe from this book, if you're reading it, it's like you've got Max in your ear.
Yeah, which, as my wife will tell you, is one of the worst things that could possibly happen to you.
Because it's not just like, it's not your regular, these are the ingredients and this is the method. It's literally like you are talking us through the process,
yeah,
your inner thoughts,
yeah,
your asides, your jokes, which are great.
Thank you. But yeah, I wanted it to be very much written like that to help, to just make it easier for everybody to think about what sandwiches they might want to,
yeah,
make. That is, like, I see this as much as being a kind of prosaic list of recipes to be followed,
yeah,
to make a sandwich, that I want this to encourage people to just think, oh my God, I never thought about putting that in between two bits of bread.
And that and they will think that.
Yeah, but and that how that might, you know, I want to help people make better sandwiches,
yeah,
at home, and as well as obviously following the recipes in these,
yeah,
that are all, you know, 41 or however many it is, delicious sandwiches,
yeah,
and hundreds of recipes. But that, yeah, that this is the beginning of you looking at your leftovers, for,
yeah,
example,
yeah,
and thinking, oh, if I blended that up and mixed it into mayonnaise, or if I threw that in the deep fat fryer, or whatever it is.
Could I make a sandwich out of it?
Yeah, yeah. What kind of a sandwich, yeah, would I be able to come up with?
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned, you know, that it was things you've eaten, places you've been, people you've met. Talk us a little bit through your creative process in terms of like how you get that sort of light bulb moment of like, that's going to make a sandwich, and how you translate that into a recipe.
Yeah, I obviously, the truth is,
don't have to give all your secrets away.
Well, no, I don't care about giving away my secrets, but It's mostly I don't think about sandwiches. Mm. It's like I try to think about plates of food, of dishes, and of things that are all delicious together. And once I have that, then I try to turn that into a sandwich by thinking about, well, if there is lots of soft stuff, I need something crunchy. Right. And what might that be? Or if everything in it is cold, how could I bring a hot element into it? And I look for contrasts in, I think that obviously my mantra for years in the making of sandwich shop sandwiches has been hot, cold, sweet, sour, crunchy, soft. And it is in those three core contrasts that I believe deliciousness lies.
Yeah.
And I haven't necessarily stuck rigidly to that in the making of sandwiches. Like, these are for people to make at home. You're not in a restaurant kitchen. Well, you're not in a restaurant at all. You're at home. but I do still always look for contrasts. Yeah. Like, when there's rich, fatty things, are there acidic, sharp things?
Yeah.
When there's, or maybe it should say, when there's fatty things, is there acidic things? When there's rich things, is there fresh things? Yeah. And I'm always looking for that balance between things. Yeah. And kind of the more you can get in there, the better.
You said that the book plays fast and loose with the definition of a sandwich, and you are keen on the idea of fluidity, aren't you? Like, not let's not get too hung up on it.
Well, let's not get too bogged down. You know, whether or not a hot dog is a sandwich.
That was the sticking point, wasn't it?
Well, just does it really matter? Like, who cares? Like, I think what I wrote in the book was, when it comes to the existential nature of a sausage sandwich, the answer to whether or not a hot dog is a sandwich is the same as to triangles, rectangles, or squares. And that is, who cares? Like, what shape you cut your sandwich into is your business, nobody else's.
Yeah.
Just as whether or not, you know, look, is a hot dog a sandwich? I don't know. Does it technically have toppings, not fillings? Maybe that is arguably something that makes it a hot dog, not a sandwich. But at the end of the day, I just don't think it matters. Yeah. I don't care. Most things looked at right are arguably a sandwich.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, in this book, there are burgers, bao, there's wraps of various kinds, kind of kebabby things, through to Sweden's approach to wrapped stuff. There's all manner of bready treats.
Yeah.
And for me, that's what I want from a book about sandwiches.
Yeah.
I don't want a boring diatribe about why something isn't a sandwich.
Yeah.
I'd rather have the attitude of like, yeah, well, this could be a sandwich, so let's go with it.
And you are fond of a sausage, aren't you?
Yes, indeed. The greatest life advice my dad has ever given me was, if there's a sausage on the menu, Max, order it. Whether you choose to take that literally or metaphorically about, you know, the nature's infinite diversity and the wonderful things we might be offered, and that we should, you know, take the bull by the horns, or however you want to change it, this into another cliche. I think that when there's a sausage on the menu, you should order it.
Yeah. And I was thinking that because you've got like the, as an Andana sausage, like with a...
Using a merguez to make a hot
sausages.
Dog.
You've got like chorizo, you've got...
Yeah.
You've even got a banana masquerade in a sausage.
I've even got a banana hot dog. The best dessert ever. Never mind is a hot dog a sandwich.
Yeah.
Is a banana in a bun a hot dog?
No, it's getting really existential now.
John Donne is spinning in his grave.
Also, I love the fact that the difficulty ranges from really easy in the first chapter to take a day off work.
Yeah. Well, so why the first half of the book is broken up into these chapters.
Yeah. Is it because you wanted people to have an in? Like, you don't want them to look at it and go, whoa, hang on.
It is that.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, they are really easy, a bit less easy, a bit of effort, labour of love, and take a day off work. And that those are depending, because how I use cookbooks and how I therefore imagine lots of other people use cookbooks is that when I decide to cook a recipe out of any cookbook, my two main considerations are how much shopping is involved and how long is it going to take.
Yeah.
And obviously you can sort of infer that if something is much less effort to make, it's probably got simpler contents and therefore there's going to be less shopping involved.
Yeah.
So the core basis on which you choose what to cook is how much time have you got.
Yeah.
And so I thought that that was just like the most accessible and friendly way to split up the recipes was, yeah, how long is it, literally, how long is it going to take you to make it?
The other thing that I really like about it is that you're quite fond of giving people the permission to cheat. For example, there's a recipe I'm going to make this weekend, which is the coronation fried chicken.
Oh, yes. But
in the recipe, you say you could just sub in a chicken Kiev. Yeah. You know, and I love, it's kind of like you give this really great kind of recipe, which uses Carl Clark.
Carl Clark's amazing famous fried chicken recipe. Yeah.
And which made me go to that bit of the book and go, wow, I'm definitely going to make that. And then you're like, but you know what? If you're not really feeling it, make the sauce and just get yourself a chicken Kiev.
Yeah. Well, I think that that is, but that's partly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you want to spend a couple of hours making perfect fried chicken, go for your life. Or if you just want to think, well, that sandwich sounds nice, but I don't want to spend 5 hours making it, just bung a bloody Kiev in it from M&S. And like, I don't care and neither should you.
Yeah.
And there is actually, there's a bit in it that I love. Where is it? So there's a whole chapter in the second half about breaded meats. And there's loads of breaded meats. And Meredith Erickson wrote this brilliant book called Alpine Cookery, right. I can't remember, where she like assembled some team of 40 people and they made hundreds of schnitzels to arrive at what
the perfect schnitzel.
At the perfect schnitzel. And I, as an errant recipe snaffler at the best of times, I couldn't resist talking about the method that Meredith has figured out. So I give this really long recipe for the perfect way of cooking a schnitzel.
Yeah. And what are you trying to achieve with that?
You're just trying to cook a schnitzel it's literally the perfect way to cook it, where you get the soup. So what they say, why you cook them at a lower temperature is so that the breadcrumb layer sets, but rather than like gripping onto the meat, you get air. As the meat steams inside, the crust puffs up. And what you're ideally looking for in like the classic schnitzel is actually a separation of the layer between the meat and the breaded layer.
Wow, okay.
And so I explain over like the course of two pages how you do that if you want to. And then at the very end, it says, I know this isn't easy and the oil temperatures and stuff are tricky, but that's how it is if you want to cook a schnitzel as one is meant to cook a schnitzel. What kind of pound shop cookbook would this be if I told you to sack off all that malarkey and just fry it in a pan in a splash of oil like you might fry anything else? And the book's full of those things of just like, oh, sod it. Just, you know, bodge it. Who cares? It's a sandwich, not a tax return. Yeah. Like, not everything has to be perfect. And like, it doesn't matter.
But the nice thing about it is you can do the bodge cheat job, or you can do the deep dive and spend, you know.
And spend a whole Saturday doing it.
Doing it, which is
exactly
lovely.
And I think that, because one of the things that has been, there's all these stats about like what percentage of cookbooks bought are actually
used,
cooked for.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is like insanely low, the number of cookbooks that are bought that are cooked from. But what I have found, I mean, partly due to the magic of social media, is still now that the first book I wrote about sandwiches is like 5 or 6 years old now. And still, every day I'm getting tagged somewhere of someone actually making something out of that book. And so I wanted to approach this book not as like a vanity project of me trying to be like, oh, aren't I clever with all my, you know, wacky ideas about what you can put in sandwiches, but to actually make it about cooking from it.
Yeah.
Because it appears that something about sarnies or I don't know what it is, but the people really actually cook from the first one. And so I wanted this book to be full of opportunities to actually make the stuff. And by saying, look, just take this thing out of a jar and mix it into mayonnaise. And I'm not telling anyone that you have to make your own mayonnaise to make, or make your own bread to make a sandwich. Like, there's nothing wrong with a supermarket ciabatta. Brilliant bit of bread, great bit of sandwich kit. And that, so that I wanted just to make it as friendly as possible to cook from.
Yeah, and I was gonna talk about that actually, because the makeup of the book is such that you have your sandwich recipes in the front half, and then it doesn't. For example, let's take the chicken one that we just talked about.
The coronation chicken.
So you've got your bit of fried chicken, you've got your coronation sauce, you've got pickled onions in there.
Onions, all lettuce and herbs.
Yeah. The components to that are all in the back of the book, it's incredible. It's like an encyclopedia of sandwich fillings there's sauces, there's crispy bits, there's potato
there's
things.
Meat braises, there's fish recipes. Yeah. What I wanted to do was to sneak a surprisingly serious cookbook on people.
And it is.
And this is like, you think, you look at it, you're like, it's 41 sandwiches. And you're like, actually, hang on, there's hundreds of recipes. And that's why every sandwich comes with this tinkering section at the bottom, where even if it is only three or four lines, within that three or four lines, there's going to be 5-6 different things that you can do in that sandwich to make it totally different, or blag it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the components you mentioned it before. One of your favourite things, I think, is mayonnaise.
I consider myself one of mayonnaise's biggest fans.
Is it like? I was thinking, like, do you sit at, eating a meal and thinking, could I mix this into mayonnaise?
Honestly, all the time. I would say that, like, when I eat a meal, 50% of me is taken up with just how could I turn that into a sandwich? And then the other 50% of me is worried about two things. Which bit of this can I blend up and mix into mayonnaise? And which bit of this can I throw in the deep fat fryer?
And that's your process.
I'm like, ta-da.
I don't know. What is it about mayo that? And I know you're a big, because you said you can't make it from scratch. There's a really nice, easy, simple method of making mayo.
Well, you can make mayo in about 10 seconds.
Yeah. But you also say you love Hellmann's.
There's nothing wrong with Hellmann's. Yeah. Hellmann's is brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, anyway, sorry. What were we saying there? What is it I like about mayonnaise? Yeah. I mean, oh God, where to begin? Janine, we better do another episode of this where we just talk. I just answer this question for an hour and a half. What do I like about mayonnaise? What I like about mayonnaise is it is the great giver of moisture in a sandwich, much more so than butter. Mayonnaise makes a sandwich juicy. It's also one of the great ways of making it easier to run a condiment well. Yeah. See, I don't think of mayonnaise as a condiment. It's too important for that.
It's got its own category.
The mother sauce for sandwiches. Yeah, it's got its own category. If let's say you're making a sandwich with two bits of toast, and that sandwich involves English mustard because you like English mustard with your sausages. Have you ever tried spreading English mustard on a piece of toast? It's a complete nightmare. It is impossible to spread it evenly. And so you end up where while you're eating that sandwich, one bite has all the mustard and another bite has none of the mustard because you just literally can't spread it. But if you mix English mustard into mayonnaise, you can then spread it completely uniformly throughout. And one of the only things I'm really trying to do when I'm building a sandwich to eat is I'm just thinking, how can I make sure that every bite contains every element of what I've got in there? I don't want, that's why I like cherry tomatoes are an abomination halved cherry tomatoes in a sandwich are an abomination because you have a half a cherry tomato and the next bite you have no cherry tomato. And for me, that's just not how I build sandwiches in layers so that every bite has every element.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that's one of the reasons
I love
mayonnaise.
And you've got things like bacon fat mayo.
Oh, yeah.
Chorizo mayo, lime pickle mayo. I think one of your most famous has got to be gravy.
Gravy mayonnaise.
You invented it, didn't you?
I think so.
You invented it.
I think I invented that. And I know that KFC have trademarked gravy nays. But I would like to point out they did that like 5 years after I did gravy mayonnaise. So, yeah, I... gravy mayonnaise. I love the idea. Everyone needs something they can go to their grave proud of. And mine is gravy mayonnaise. And I've got... can I tell you how that came about?
Please.
So, the night before I opened my sandwich shop.
Yeah.
And actually, we don't use beef anymore at the sandwich shop. We use goat instead. It braises so beautifully. But anyway, I braised this beef overnight, the night before the Sarnie shop opened, for a sandwich. Yeah, for a beef sandwich. But in the morning, I came in and I, using a spider, like a big a spoon thing, I took all the beef out of the cooking liquid and put it into a tub to use later in the sandwiches. And I was left looking at like this vat of gravy, of cooking, braising liquid, stew liquor. And I was just thinking, like, what kind of business would this be if I threw that away? But how? I didn't want to do like jugs of gravy on the side, like a classic French dip, because I wanted the sandwiches to be different, to not really be able to be compared to other sandwiches. So I just thought, like, how could you get all that gravy into the sandwich without ladling gravy onto the sandwich and making it really messy?
Yeah.
And I thought, do you know what? I know what you do. You harness the powers of reduction. And I just boiled it down and mixed it into mayonnaise and put that in the... And now that is one of the MOs of the sandwich shop, is like whatever the braising liquor is from any of the meats, we always reduce the braising liquor down, put it into the mayonnaise and serve that in the sandwich.
Yeah, I love that. Because we've got the... we've been lucky enough to feature some of the recipes in our May issue. And one of them is the goat tikka.
Take another little piece of my heart.
Yeah. You love a good
great
sandwich
name for
bun.
A sandwich.
Yeah. And in that, you take the sort of tikka masala sauce and mix that into mayo.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Looks incredible.
It's not easy being this brilliant, Janine, I tell you. Life's a struggle.
I did want to acknowledge as well, and one thing I loved about the book is, and you've mentioned a couple of other cooks. I mentioned quite a few of the cooks and just as we've been chatting, there's so many references to other sources and books. The bibliography in the back is huge.
Yeah.
And, you know, unlike, a lot of cooks and chefs do that, but yours is like, you really are giving people their due, like where you found this,
it's also that I read cookbooks a lot. I sit around on my sofa reading a cookbook, like a lot in... When I guess a lot of people might be watching telly or whatever it is, and I'm nose deep in, I don't know, whatever, just like some new book I've got. And many of my ideas come from other people's ideas. Yeah. And I want to acknowledge, I want to acknowledge that. And I want to show people that that's what I do. And that's what they should do too. That it is like, read a cookbook and just think like, could I turn that into a sandwich? And that's a great place to start for people to be able to make their own amazing sandwiches at home.
What's nice about it is it takes the reader on a journey, as in you talk about masala hasan, and then you go to the back and in the bibliography you find her book, so people could then go and do further reading. And that's lovely that you're kind of introducing all of these different voices as well.
Yeah, very much. And I would love it if, I mean, look, Marcella Zan must have sold a million cookbooks, but if I introduce one person to that book that hadn't heard of it before, then that's a wonderful thing, isn't it? That's spreading the love.
I wanted to ask you, actually, like, in a time where a lot of cooks and chefs and creators seem to be absolutely obsessed with working the Instagram algorithms.
Yeah.
You seem refreshingly unbothered by that, Max. I mean, because I was just thinking, I see Max style sandwiches all the time on Instagram, and you just haven't gone down that road of kind of, is that something
what now is like the cut through, isn't it? It's like the thing.
Yeah.
Look, I've gone to a lot of those places that do all those big cut-throughs.
Yeah.
And I wonder, you have to wonder sometimes you wonder if they have even eaten it themselves. You know, it's like sometimes you go to restaurants and you think, like, do the people, have the people that own this restaurant ever actually sat in it and eaten lunch? And sometimes those sarnies. Look, I am obsessed with deliciousness above all other things. And the way that I go about putting sarnies together is only and exclusively based on their deliciousness.
Yeah. But did you ever feel, I mean, I think I know the answer to this. Did you ever feel the pressure to get on Instagram and do all of those videos and reels of making up the sandwiches and stuff?
Not really, no. I always just saw social media as for the lols.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you see something stupid, put a picture of it up and say, wee, look at this stupid thing I've seen, you know. Or if you see something brilliant. Yeah. But yeah, I've not really gone down the route of like curating content.
Yeah, that's quite obvious.
Yeah, I'm too busy throwing stuff in the deep fat fryer for that.
And it reminds me of something you said to me way back, because we've done two podcasts previous to this. We're actually in the sandwich shop drinking beer, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
And if people want to listen to it, they can use Google and
they're still around.
But you said something about a restaurant being a collection of small things, but each thing done really, really well.
It was Marco Pierre White quoting Fernand Poin.
Okay.
That perfection is lots of little things done well.
Yeah. I think that comes through like in your book and in the salmon shop and in what you do, that kind of level of care that you show.
Yeah. But it's that obsessing and with those cut-throughs, those social media sandwich cut-throughs, that is an example of they are obsessing about the aesthetic.
Yeah.
And for me, any obsession, I mean, obsession is largely a negative thing, right? Yeah. That obsession is always at the expense of something else. And so it is that if you have obsessed with making that sandwich look like that, have you paid enough attention to what it tastes like and what it's like to eat?
Yeah.
And I think the answer is no. Like when we make a new sandwich at the sandwich shop, let's say there's six components in the sandwich, we will make that sandwich with all those components in different orders and eat the sandwich. And that is because the different order that you put things in the sandwich really changes the experience of eating it. But we do that only for flavour.
Yeah.
Only for deliciousness.
Not for the look.
Not for the look. And in those other ones, sometimes I see things in those cut-through sandwiches.
Think it's the wrong order.
You wouldn't have that next to that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, why would you have two soft things next to each other without a crunchy thing in between them? Like, that is a sandwich made for the look, not for the taste.
Love it. Can we talk a bit about your pubs?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'm just interested.
Losers, isn't it?
Because I tried to get you on. We did a little series on, I can't remember what happened. I think I tried to get you on and you were away or you were just about to have a baby or something was happening anyway.
Yeah.
What made you decide to become a pub owner?
Pubs are brilliant, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean,
you've got to do your hobby.
Question,
try and do your hobby. So there's no food in my pubs.
Okay.
Unless, as we always say to people, when they say, do you do food? We say, well, that depends on whether you think a pickled egg and a bag of crisps is lunch, which I do. So I've always loved boozers.
Yeah,
and one of my favourite pubs is the Park Tavern in Finsbury Park, which is what is called a wet pub. Like they don't do food.
Yeah.
Anyway, and in there, you can go to the fish and chip shop and get fish and chips and you can go and eat it in the pub with a pint.
Yeah.
Or you can get a Domino's delivered to the pub. They don't mind. They have kitchen roll and cutlery and bottles of ketchup that they can give you to have with your food. And I just think that is so wonderful and welcoming. And I wanted my pubs that rather than, you know, the business model largely now is to sell you food.
Yeah.
You know, and I just thought, like, what a shame that has become the pub business model. And that I thought, whatever happened to the
just being able to go in and get a,
and I get it. If you're in a if you're in the middle of nowhere in the countryside, obviously you need to do food.
Yeah.
But if you're in like a town centre, you know, I've got a pub in like the centre of Marlborough and Bath and the places like large towns, small cities, whatever. And whatever happened to the boozer? Yeah. And I just felt like that was such a shame.
I love the fact that you're championing that.
Yeah. And so that is my idea for the pubs. I wanted them to look like my fantasies, a kind of East End boozers. So the first thing that happens when I've taken over a pub is we build bonquettes inside. Because for me, a velvet bonquette is just like, it's that moment. I've got my pint. I sit down on the bonquette and I look and I just think like, this is life's a dreamboat.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so I wanted to, I don't know, help try and bring back the proper, the old fashioned boozer.
Do you have places nearby that people can get food from? I mean, do you follow that model?
You can get food delivered to our pubs. It doesn't matter. We've got cutlery and bottles of hot sauce and all this business.
Yeah. So three pubs, is that going to be your empire, or are you thinking about?
I don't know. If the right ones come along, I would definitely do more.
Really?
Boozers are brilliant.
Yeah. So what's next? I mean,
don't know. Well, this book, really.
Yeah.
It's funny. I guess having just had a baby, I realised that the book, it kind of is metaphorically quite similar to having a baby.
Of course it is.
Where it's like there's been this gestation period.
Yeah.
Right. Obviously, it took a year to write this thing.
Yeah.
That's also how many words are in this. This is like three times more words than a lot of cookbooks, but you'd never notice that from the first half being just kind of sandwiching.
And you collaborated with Ben on it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Ben Benton, who's your sidekick.
I love Ben Benton. Yeah. He is no sidekick. We hold hands and walk together. He's the best cook I know.
Yeah.
And that's straight up the end of it. Like he is like, if anyone in the world could make me lunch, I would love Ben Benton to make me lunch. He's just brilliant. And he gets deliciousness.
Yeah.
And so, I've done all the cookbooks I've done have been with Ben because he's brilliant.
Yeah. When is the book out?
The 25th of April.
Thank you for coming to chat about it today. It's been illuminating, as
Thank
always.
You.
And I wish you every success with the book because I think it's absolutely fantastic. I'll just mention your Instagram for people who want to keep
Please.
Up with your...
With my potty mouth assertions.
Which is at Lunch Luncheon, is that right? Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
And is that the best place for people to keep up with what you're doing?
Yeah, and if they're making anything, please tag me. It's like the coolest thing ever to see people.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again for coming to chat to us, Max. It's been brilliant.
Thank you, Jenny.
That was the Olive Podcast. For more information, go to olivemagazine.com. And don't miss our Little Black Book bonus episodes, where guests give us their latest eating, drinking, and travel tips, out every Wednesday.